space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the last regular, what do they call it in this, first run episode, I guess is an old timey way to say this is the very last episode of TOS. It's the last episode that we're going to be talking about on the podcast, and it was the last episode to air. It's called Turnabout Intruder. Clay is here to talk about this one. Clay, how are you?
I'm good, and I would just like to thank this episode for finally showing us why a woman can't be president.
Yeah, this is the greatest anti- Clinton campaign that's ever been run, and it ran 50 years before it was to be considered. But
I'm going to be honest with you, this might be one of the most offensive hours of television I've ever watched.
In this episode, Captain Kirk becomes trapped in the body of a mentally unstable woman. I mean, what woman isn't? Bent on killing him and taking over his command in his guise. It's Turnabout Intruder. It was directed by Herb Wallerstein. Story credit goes to Gene Roddenberry. Teleplay goes to Arthur Singer, aired back on June 3rd, 1969. Season 3, episode 24, Turnabout Intruder. Me and Clay are going to come back right after this audio clip, and we're going to talk about the wonderful end to TOS, Turnabout Intruder.
Mm-hmm. Sadly, that's an obligation. I assume that this switch was arrived at by mutual agreement.
No. It was brought about by a violent attack by Dr. Lester and the use of equipment she discovered on Camus 2.
Violence? By the lady perpetrated on Captain Kirk. I asked the assembled personnel to look at Dr. Janice Lester and visualize that historic moment. Can you tell me why Dr. Janice Lester would agree to this ludicrous exchange?
Yes, to get the power she craved, to attain a position she doesn't merit by temperament or training. And most of all, she wanted to murder James Kirk, a man who once loved her. But her intense hatred of her own womanhood made life with her impossible.
So I think I'm going to have two ways to look at this. It's nice that we can avoid talking about this one as a sort of series finale, because TV shows in the 60s didn't really have series finales. So there's nothing different about this episode. You know, nothing in this episode wraps up the series, which is going to make it different from The All Good Things, which is obviously written to be a wrap-up. This is just a regular episode featuring a regular TOS plot, a season three plot, I might say. But outside of that, I think we're probably going to spend more time on the sort of philosophy of this one and like the reaction to it, I think, more than the intricacies of the plot. But I will say, Clay, that you, I don't think you've had a TOS courtroom episode yet, if I'm remembering properly. And this has a courtroom scene. And I think without an exception, every episode of this series that has a courtroom scene is terrible. And I don't know why they do it. There's an episode called Court Martial in the first season, and it's probably one of the worst episodes of the first season. There's the one where Scotty's a serial killer, and that one has a courtroom scene and it's terrible. And Turnabout Intruder.
Is there a lot of sweaty close-ups in that one too?
No, I don't think so. That's a season three thing, I think. So what'd you think about Turnabout Intruder?
I think, you know, as someone who has watched a number of episodes across two series worth of Star Trek that involve women and their leadership roles, I can't help but think that Gene Roddenberry has some weird hang-ups about women.
You don't say.
'Cause as I said in the opening, this might be one of the most offensive TV episodes I've ever seen, where like race isn't involved.
Yes,
because it's like it's shockingly. I mean, I guess for the even for the 60s, this is pretty bad. But I mean, anybody watching this now, this is pretty rough.
It's. I mean, the main the main sort of beat that would be controversial is that Dr. Lester, who's the woman who switches bodies with Kirk and sort of takes command of the Enterprise, while Kirk has to try to convince people that he's not really Dr. Lester. He's actually Kirk in mm-hmm. Lester's body. She is... They knew each other at the Academy, and she didn't get a captaincy job, and she blames it basically on her gender, saying that the reason she didn't get the job is not because she's obviously crazy, it's because she's a woman. And Kirk, it's what's funny to me about this episode is that it's easy to largely ignore that aspect of it. Like, I know that's the point of the episode, but it's so tangential to sort of the mechanics of it that it really feels mm-hmm. like it's just tacked on for no particular reason. And if this episode was like a man switched bodies, I don't think it becomes appreciably worse of an episode in many ways.
No, and it doesn't, I don't think it becomes appreciably better.
No,
either.
It wouldn't, no.
It's, well, first of all, I don't know if this is the first time this has happened in the TOS, but I'm happy to see they got a body switching episode in Under the Wire.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to think, I don't know if there's a single sci-fi show that I can think of that doesn't do that at least once.
Right, yeah. The old Standby. I don't think there has been one. I think this is the first, unless I'm missing something. But yeah, this is the most, you know, in the way of the cliche, the most body switchy episode mm-hmm. that the show's ever done.
It's funny because I feel like I spoke too soon a couple episodes ago when I thought they were going to do that with the Spock's brain one.
Oh, where right.
It was gonna, you know, he was going to be written out basically like the prisoner. But no, we get that in this one, only you see both sides. You know, the thing that doesn't make this work, though, is the reason a lot of those episodes tend to work is because you usually do it with two main cast members.
Yes.
You know, like in the X-Files, it'll be Mulder and Scully switching bodies, or, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You know, all those guys are kind of, you know, basically it's an excuse to have to play off of the relationships.
Yeah.
And in this one, it's just Kirk and some lady that we've never met before, that until she switches bodies, she just sort of like rolls around kind of like faintly in a bed.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know. It's a good excuse to let, you know, Shatner go full Shatner on, to let him shat himself.
Yes, yeah, he shat himself multiple times. I mean, and
The scene where he's calling out Spock as a potentially pulling this stuff because he wants to be captain of the Enterprise is pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, his hysterics as like ignoring the sort of like sexism or angle or whatever, like his he plays a hysterical woman fairly well. You know, like he's pretty good at it. And something that I wanted to mention, I tweeted about it, but everyone, the journey of TOS is ending for me right about now, and it's been an interesting little thing. I'm going to have a wrap up video, but the plots that everyone remembers from TOS are from seasons 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
The tone that everyone remembers is from season 3.
Yeah,
And
I was thinking that too. Yeah,
yeah. So it's very. Shatner has basically just gone off the reservation with his acting. The sort of the melodrama of it is very much in place, and the pointlessness of it has kind of been something that's happened throughout the series, and I think it's a big problem of it. But this episode could have been fixed by, at no point does Kirk just say, "Hey Spock, remember yesterday when I told you about that thing that only you should know? How would I know that now?" You know what I mean? They never have. They go through such machinations of doing the mind meld and
mm-hmm.
not believing, you know, the woman. And he's like, "Well, you could have easily read up about every single thing that Kirk has ever done." It's like, just tell me something that we talked about yesterday that she would have no possible way to know that that's what we talked about.
Yeah, they try to do that a little bit, but it's all stuff that Spock is like, "Well, that stuff is very, you know, well documented." So they don't really.
Yeah, they're famous missions.
Yeah, they don't ever get into it. Yeah, I don't know why the woman as Kirk, or you know what I mean. I don't know why Kirk doesn't try to do something a little bit more specific.
Right. just, and it's a lot of, the script really just fails on, for me, on that level. It's like, it doesn't, it's fundamentally not recognizing the fact that this should be relatively easy to at least get more people on your side.
Yeah.
If not convince them that this has actually happened, at least have them be like, well, how the hell would she actually know that? That doesn't make any sense. And they, what's interesting to me about the script is that they actually don't go into a personal angle with it. They do it very clinically. It's like a mm-hmm. very clinical episode of what's going on, where the conversation with McCoy and Spock have in sickbay, where he's like, well, it's my prerogative to make sure that this, it's like such a dry analysis of the situation that they're trying to get through.
Yeah.
And it's just really not very interesting to me.
Yeah, no, I didn't take many notes on this one, but under, sorry, when they, my first note was written after they switched bodies because I didn't know that was happening, and I just wrote "fuck you" with five U's in it.
Yeah.
But
with a Y and an O, or is it just the U's after the fuck?
FUUUUUUUUCKYOU.
Oh, gotcha.
But after that, one of the next things I wrote was, what the fuck is the point of all of this? Because I, like, once everything started going, there was no point to any of it except for the fact that she wants to be the captain, I guess.
Yeah, she wants to be a captain.
And I don't know. It did, there wasn't really a lot there to work with, story-wise. And, yeah, it was just kind of a waste of time, I thought.
It's just, you know, the script, there's no reason that, like, the script makes her keep Kirk around, like the woman body with Kirk's brain in it, because she sort of gets caught before she can smother him with a pillow. But the episode just makes it artificially difficult for her to not get rid of them. In a way,
yes.
Like they,
yeah.
The episode,
especially,
yeah, go
I was
ahead.
Just saying, especially at the end, when for some reason, even though the woman is physically attacking the other doctor, Kirk doesn't just shoot her.
Right.
He stands there and goes, "Kill him, kill him," in full view of everybody else. If ever there was a perfect time, or with even a smidge of justifiable cause to shoot her, it would be that time. And
yeah.
He just stands, like, he can't kill her because of what?
Right.
I don't know.
Dr. Coleman. It's that kind of, it's that kind of thing. And like the reaction of the crew is funny to me because they can't go too mutinous too soon. So they have to allow it to happen. And the scene where, Kirk as Lester walks into the room and she's like, "Bones, Spock, I need to talk to you." And Kirk just karate chops her, knocks her.
Yeah.
And Spock and McCoy are totally cool with it. He's yeah. like, Kirk's like, "She was going to kill me. I had to knock her out." So that's
what it is. Wasn't going to kill him. She could have killed someone.
Oh, someone. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank God.
So it was a very preemptive strike. I do want to say that I do want to give this episode a lot of credit for giving me an insight into what the Trump White House must be like.
Yes.
Especially towards the end there, where he's just kind of losing his shit and yelling at people. I feel like it's probably very accurate.
So, I mean, we're both on the agreement about the sort of technical aspects of this show, right? I don't think it's great. I actually don't think it's bad. It just kind of sits there. It's a very generic sort of TOS script in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's another one that feels like, what was the phrase that you used the last time? Like it was, they didn't write an outline.
Oh, right. Yeah, they just kind of write it. They write without an outline, yeah.
Because it starts, I mean, it feels like two people passing something back and forth to each other again, because it's like, well, okay, we start off with Kirk and this woman, pass it off. Okay, what if he knows the woman? Okay, pass it off.
Right.
Yeah, what if they were a couple at one point? Okay, pass it off. But what if she's mad at him? Pass it off.
Right.
Okay, but what if they switch brains? Okay, pass it off. How do we do that? Oh, there's a thing in the, you know, like, it,
yeah,
like the thing that they use to switch bodies doesn't even come back. We don't even learn what the fuck it is.
No, they don't explain it.
It's just a giant light up wall.
It's actually, I really liked the wall, actually. maybe it's the quality of the episode, but I really thought that it was kind of cool looking. It is bizarre that they don't explain what it is and why this culture would have it, and how she knows how to activate it. Is interesting.
that, I mean, there's no, honestly, I don't think any of this stuff would have saved it, but it's like there's no explanation of, yeah, why she knows how to activate it, or even at the end, or like the doctor doesn't even seem to know or care how she did, like.
Yes, you're talking like about Coleman, right? Her, yeah, like her Coleman, lover.
Like there was a, this was all part of the plan, I guess.
I mean, but the Coleman thing is the Coleman only exists to remove McCoy from the equation, right?
Right.
There's
right.
no reason for him to be in this episode whatsoever, except that they need another doctor who can take his place when Kirk sort of removes McCoy from the situation.
Right.
And it's really, they're in a relationship, I guess, but his motivation for what he's trying to do to help her do this doesn't make any sense to me.
Love isn't enough, Wes.
Yeah, he won't kill for her, but he will allow her to hijack a body and sort of command a starship that she's obviously
also,
not qualified.
Also, the voiceover stuff, I wanted to blow my brains out.
Yes.
Like they can't do a captain's log, so they just have a voiceover of... Oh, no, they do Kirk doing just a voiceover, but then when they go to the woman, she actually does say captain's
yes,
log.
Yes, that's the way... How did she make a captain's log?
I don't think they understand how that actually works.
That's,
That screams to me like someone who knows the trope of the show but doesn't understand what the captain's log actually is.
It's actually been a recurring joke. You know in Arena, the one where he fights the Gorn?
Yeah.
He gets beamed down unknowingly that he's going to go onto the planet. And so you see the Gorn, and it goes to commercial. It comes back from commercial, and he goes, "Captain's log, I've been beamed down to this planet." And it's like, yeah. he can't record that right there. He doesn't have the recording device. He would need to,
correct.
You need to assume that he's going back to the ship and recording it as though he's in present tense, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, unless he's doing what I think they do in a lot of reality shows, where just after the fact,
yeah,
they have people talk about it as though it's happening right now.
It's the Enterprise when things start being real and start getting real or whatever that is.
I hope the captain's log is one of those confessional chambers from the real world.
Yes, yes. It...
Where Scotty can walk in and be like, you know, I just really can't deal with McCoy today. Boy, he's just been looking at me, and he stole my last pop dart.
And it's it would have to have one episode that's always like The Office, where the person starts doing it and then says, "I can't do this," and takes their microphone off and goes to do something that's off camera.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the philosophy of this one. This episode is reviled. I think this episode might be more hated than I think it deserves, although you said you didn't like it at all and you thought it might be one of the worst television episodes you've seen. So do you want to explain?
Not worst,
okay,
but just like offensive.
Offensive, okay, maybe that's...
Because once they set out what the gimmick here is, which is a woman angry about not having an opportunity because she's a woman, so then she, you know, switches bodies to a man, but you don't find out any of that stuff until she already switches bodies. So
right.
It comes off as like really fucked up because it's just like William Shatner berating a woman about gender.
What does he say in the courtroom scene? He's like, she couldn't handle her own womanhood or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. And then, you know, but even after they switch bodies, it's like everything that Kirk does, just if you're thinking about it as the mind of this woman who's doing it, it just comes off as like, oh, she can't handle her shit as a captain. I guess you could make the excuse that she's supposed to be crazy, but honestly, we don't even know that.
No, because, no, you don't.
You know, the only reason we know this because at the end they're like, yeah, she's kind of nuts. But even there, that's kind of reductive.
Yes.
Like, and the way that they treat, so basically as Kirk with the woman brain is just acting like a crazy woman, who's very emotional and can't handle, the leadership position she's been put into.
Right.
But then the woman with Kirk's brain, her entire arc until, Spock kind of comes over to her side is basically people going, "You really need to calm down, sweetie," and then like sedating her. it's pretty offensive.
He's like, "Have you used your vibrator recently? Or you could really just tone yourself down here." Yeah, the sedation thing is very funny. That she hasn't done anything wrong to that point. So they just keep sedating her, mostly because Kirk insists that she's a threat to other people. And I think that people would say that this is a response to 60s feminism, which I think it kind of is. It's the idea that women are trying to take jobs that they probably can't handle. And that,
you know, let's tread lightly through this minefield.
Yeah, I think that the response is that idea that this woman is trying desperately to have the position that only a man can really have, and that, you know, women want to kill men and take their jobs, but they ultimately won't be able to successfully accomplish them. Is kind of what the episode seems to be saying. It doesn't say that outright, but that's what you could read into it.
Right.
And it's you can give it credit that Kirk doesn't try to seduce her at any point in the episode.
I guess.
which I think is something, especially considering his history and everything like that. But it's
they should have flipped the script on it and had Kirk as the woman seducing Kirk with the woman's brain.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, just turn around on him. Do you think the female actress did a good job portraying Kirk or Shatner?
Actually, yes. I thought she was pretty good.
Yeah.
When she finally wakes up out of her sedation slumber, I thought she was pretty good. Yeah, she did a good job.
Yeah, I'd agree. Shatner is overdoing it, but I actually think he's. If you take it for the rationale that this woman is crazy, I think he did a good job. If you take the mind that she's just a woman and he's playing a sort of like high energy woman, it's a little bit more offensive, or it's a little bit more like comical at that point than anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't place any of that stuff on him.
No.
If I would put it more on the writers than I would on him.
Yeah. Did you think he did a good job, all things considered, with it?
Sure. Yeah. he is very rarely unentertaining to watch.
Yes.
And when they kind of, you know, just take the cap off the bottle there, it's not probably the best acting. I shouldn't say that. It's probably not a mark of quality that most people would call good acting, but he is damn fun to watch do it.
Yeah, right. Do you think that what's your opinion of Shatner after all this time? Do you like his approach to portraying Kirk, I guess, in terms of his acting choices? Do you have any thoughts about it? Or
I think he's I've always liked him as Kirk, and just, well, I mean, you know, I'm trying to think, is this really the only thing I've really seen him in?
Rescue 911.
Yeah, I guess this Star Trek, and he was on that show Boston Legal.
Yep,
which was a really great show.
Didn't he do Magnum PI or something like that?
T.J. Hooker.
T.J. Hooker. That's right.
Yeah, which I've never watched.
He
pops up in stuff, not as much as you'd think. Actually, now I'm thinking it back. At least stuff I've seen. But he is. I feel like he's a really good actor, but you got to know how to get it out of him.
Yeah.
And in the first couple seasons, or especially the first season, I was surprised at how restrained he was. And I thought he was doing a pretty good job. But, you know, at this point where it's clearly nobody gives a shit anymore, he can do whatever he wants. And he seems to be like.
Do you think he's trying to fill the void, or do you think that he's trying to? I always wonder what you think his motivation is for playing this. Do you think he's actually playing a? Do you think he thinks he's as loud as he is in these later performances? Do you think what he thinks he's doing is good, or do you think he's just like, you know what, this is silly, and I need to just hold the audience's attention with my acting?
I honestly don't know. I think he's got a bit of Nicolas Cage about him, where it's really tough to figure out whether or not he knows what he's doing.
Right, yeah.
I shouldn't say that, because obviously he knows what he's doing, but it's tough to figure out whether or not he knows how far over the top he's going.
Sure.
Or if he does know, and he's doing it on purpose. But what I remember about how he works is on Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, Nicholas Meyer, the director, talked about how they had to do take after take after take after take because Shatner was so hammy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until he just got so, like, tired and bored that he just said the lines like a normal person.
Right, yeah.
That he would get the really good stuff out of him. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's, you know, he's probably got a lot of stage actor in him where it's like he's got to play to the back of the room.
Right, yeah.
Even though he's been working in television for, you know, 60 years, I guess he doesn't really do as much as he used to, but back then where he was fairly new to TV,
yeah,
I think he was still playing back to the back of the room more than he really needed to.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it's interesting just because I don't mind it. Like, it's so much of a part of the show at this point that you're like,
go ahead.
Well, yeah, you just kind of accept it. And like, it doesn't seem as ridiculous, I think, as if it was not the accepted, like, memory of him, that this is how he does it, that it might seem a little bit weirder in that way.
Yeah, I think he's a better actor than Adam West. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Adam West has a very similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
Actually, very similar now I'm thinking about it.
Shatner can actually play serious moments if you ask him to. Adam West always seems a little bit off if you ask him to do a serious moment. He seems more of like a pure sort of comedy, over the top, campy actor. Thanks.
Yeah. I think Adam West is more of a was more of a pretty face who could deliver some lines fairly well than he was a really good actor.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas I would go see. Let's put it this way. I would go see William Shatner in a play or to like doing Hamlet or something. I would not go see Adam West do those things. No offense to Adam West, but I guess offense to Adam West.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to look at it. I think it's fascinating that it went this way. Like season three, they clearly know that this is not very good and everything is just kind of given up and this is just what it is at this point. But
yeah, it was another episode where I could feel there was no budget.
Yes.
Even like there was some really weird camera setups that, or at least they felt weird to me. Like after they, so the, like that first, there's a, the first shot of Kirk, I think, is this like really weird low angle thing where he's, you know, very tall and very big in the frame, and then he kind of crouches down next to the woman on the on the bed. I don't know if that was supposed to be some like really artsy way of, you know, portraying Kirk as a looming authority figure over her or something.
Yeah.
But then when they beam back to the ship, which again they don't show the beaming part. Or do they show it when they get there?
They show it when they beam down. It's another one of these. Season three has done this weird thing of they just smash you right into the story. They like dump you into. They don't show you the people on the bridge getting the mission about what they're supposed to do. It's just they beam down. You hear a captain's log about we're here to do this, 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 and this, and then they meet the people immediately.
Yeah. Well, either way, when they beam back to the ship, there's a series of like close-ups that are just oddly framed because they just framed them in front of like the blank solid color wall of the engineering room.
Right.
And it just feels like, I don't know. It's just, it feels like there's nothing there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it just, it wasn't, you know, it was just oddly shot in some places. And yeah, you can tell that they're kind of like on cruise control.
Yeah. I'm going to have a wrap-up video about this, or I'll go more into depth. But the I was wondering if you wanted to give feedback while you're here about it. Doing this rewatch of TOS, and it's not even a rewatch because I haven't seen a lot of these, has actually de-mythologized the show for me in a way, and I have less of a respect for it now than I did where I previously didn't know all the episodes. A listener on YouTube, Barbara, I think, had mentioned that she grew up watching this on like Saturday mornings and stuff. Uh-huh. And she, I put it pretty well, I thought. She said that the show to her is a better memory than it is an actual television show.
Yeah.
And I think I 100% agree with that. There's a lot, like, I wouldn't be shocked if there were three bad episodes to every okay episode of the original series.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a very low batting average to have here. And I don't.
Yeah, it's not great.
No, there's really not that many great classic episodes that I can think of. Like, even some of what I consider to be the best are really just like fours on my scale. They're like pretty solid, but they're not earth shattering.
Right.
Do you have any sort of thoughts about why I would feel that way, or like any shows that you've watched where you've gone back and been like, you know what, this isn't all that in a bag of chips or anything like that?
Well, with this one specifically, I think I mentioned this before. I feel like it falls into the same category as like old Doctor Who, where it's more of a fond memory than it is actually like a quality experience.
Right.
However, this Star Trek, for some reason, I would agree with you. I don't think it's particularly very good. I think it's Legend. How do I put this?
I mean, I will say that all the sort of trappings of it are kind of cool. Like, I can understand why it continued and why, like, the sort of, like, the universe that he built and everything like that is pretty neat. And the way the ships look and the iconic nature of Starfleet and everything works. But it's just the writing of the actual episodes and, like, what you actually watch is not really all that strong at that.
Yeah. I think I find it, regardless of quality, at least these old ones, and, I mean, to an extent with TNG as well, it's enjoyable to have in front of my eyes,
right?
If that makes sense. Like, there's the production design, while not, you know, they're clearly not spending tens of millions of dollars on it, for whatever reason, it's just like a pleasing show to look at for the most part.
Sure, yeah.
And I think there's stuff about it. I think you're right. It's the trappings of it are really good. And if you were to watch an episode of the original series Star Trek, but with all of the dialogue was just like gibberish, I don't think it would actually make it any worse.
Right.
Like, cuz there's something about the way that Shatner delivers lines that's really enjoyable. The way that Spock is played is really enjoyable. Like, it's all just a very enjoyable experience. But yeah, when you really get down to it, it's like, oh, this isn't really that good,
right?
And I think that world, I think time has shown that the most important thing about Star Trek is the world that was created for it.
Yes, yeah, I think so.
But I don't think Star Trek really starts getting really good until they get to the movies.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you kind of end up in a situation, and you know, I think that the same thing happened with TNG, because the first season of TNG, as we've talked about a million times, it was very Roddenberry heavy and staffed with a lot of people who wrote on the original show.
Yes,
but the movies and then later the third or so seasons forward of TNG, they get good because you put new people. You give the concept to new people who can find the great stuff in the concept.
Right.
Kind of similar to, I always thought that's what George Lucas should have done with Star Wars.
Yes.
I mean, obviously that's what they're doing now to, you know, much success.
Yeah.
More or less. But, you know, by the time you get to the movies, you've got people working on that stuff who probably watched the show, because the first movie is what? 10 years after the show started?
Yes.
So you've got people working on those movies who probably watched the show. By the time the movie, the only reason the movie exists is because there was such a fan thing for the show in the 10 years it had been off the air that, you know, they thought it would be a good way to combat Star Wars. And in that 10 years, Roddenberry turned himself into L. Ron Hubbard.
Yes.
And so by the time you get to Wrath of Khan, you have this kind of thing where it's like this really great concept with a lot of history behind it to draw on if you want to, but you've also got new people involved who can really kind of look at it a little bit more objectively and pick out the really good stuff and lean into that. Like, I mean, we'll talk about this when we get to Wrath of Khan, but I mean, Nicholas Meyer, famously did not really watch Star Trek at all.
Right, yeah.
So he kind of came to it very objectively to figure out what the meat of the stuff was. And I think, of course, that I think Roddenberry hated it.
Right.
But you know, usually if Roddenberry hated it.
Hated it until it was successful. And yeah, then he turned changed his opinion about it. Yeah. But yeah,
usually if Roddenberry hates it, it means it's probably good.
It's got some kind of story to it.
Yeah.
It should be more woman hatred in this one. I think I agree. I mean,
I wasn't very succinct in my point, but I think, I don't know. I think it, did that make sense?
It does. Yeah. And I think that the setup for what he did, works. My only concern about my opinion of it is, like, and I talked about this when I was on the Trek About podcast, where I think the natural argument against what I'm saying is that you have to judge the TV based on the standard of the time that it was written in. And I understand that argument, but I also think that TV in general has gotten better. And
yeah, definitely.
So, like, it's kind of like talking about old baseball. It's like, yes, players back in the 1910s were very good, but they were playing against a much lower level of competition. So right. The greats would probably stand out a little bit more.
And then that one guy started throwing fastballs and became the best pitcher in history for the next 3 years.
Well, yeah, he started throwing it like, you know, he didn't go into his windup with his back facing the batter and the whole game was changed or something like that. But that's kind of my opinion about it. It's like, I can appreciate what TOS did. I probably will never do a rewatch of this series. Like, I would only, there's only a handful of these episodes that I would ever consider just putting on in my spare time again.
Honestly, I mean, having watched a handful of them through this time, I think the only episode I would actively go back and watch again is Balance of Terror.
Sure.
Like, I don't know what else I would get out of any of the other episodes that I watched. I mean, even City of the Edge of Tomorrow is like, I don't know. I don't really find that. I think that one gets points taken away because so much of it doesn't take place in the normal...
Right, the universe.
Normal environment. So it's like it doesn't even have that sort of... like the candy satisfaction nature of the way it looks, because it all takes place in the 20s on Earth.
I actually, before we go to our wrap up, I wanted to ask you something. So I think that as through my run through, I would consider City on the Edge to be the best episode that TOS did.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that your point was that you have a harder time saying that about the best episodes that sort of don't use the standard setup of the show. You'd have a harder time saying that you think that just because it's so novel, people would tend to overrate it, maybe.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, my only counter argument to that about this one is that I think City on the Edge is legitimately the best story. Like, the fact that it's novel is only a coincidence to the fact that it's probably the best script that they ever had. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. And
yeah, it is. I mean, it is pretty. Yeah, it is probably the best script, at least from the ones that I watched, which means, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine there being a better script than City on the Edge Forever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can understand the Balance of Terror. Balance of Terror, I think, to me, is one of the better episodes that takes place entirely in the TOS, like, standard universe type thing. That's about it. But yeah, that's it for. We talked about Turnabout Intruder. We're going to take a quick break, play an audio clip.
Just to sum up what I was saying before, though, just because I'm trying to draw it back in, so it wasn't such a now I'm just doing it, trying to explain that. as a final statement on TOS, I, much like Doctor Who, I appreciate that it exists, and my knowledge of it really informs my enjoyment of what came after it.
Yes.
However, I don't really feel like I need to go back and watch it ever.
Right. Yes. I think I 100% agree with that. I appreciate what it did. Doesn't mean that it's something enjoyable that I would go back. I just feel I'm mostly saying this because I feel there's a substantial part of the Trek audience that insists that the show has to be good. You know, like, and I think that they're sort of unwilling to take off their rose-tinted glasses about the what I consider to be pretty big flaws in this as a TV series.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. They also did some interesting data. I tweeted about it that there was a big poll where 10,000 people answered how much of each series they'd seen based on like a couple episodes, most of it, almost all of it, like to see mm-hmm. what it was. What do you think is the most watched Star Trek series, like where people have seen almost all of it and it's the highest percentage?
Well, most watched as well, because I mean
all the responders have seen almost all the episodes.
Okay, well, I guess I would probably say TOS because it has the fewest number of episodes.
It's actually TNG.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably that one. And I think that's the what most people refer to as Star Trek.
And TOS is actually the least watched out of all.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know how available that was before the streaming era.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, TNG was created as a syndicated show, so it was always on.
There was a.
So I guess that makes sense to me.
Someone on the Trek About Pod response brought up a good point where he was growing up and he watched TOS, but it was before the era of binge watching, and he thinks that the networks actually only aired the best episodes because when he went through and he like got the full series, he's like, I don't remember any of these later season 2, season 3. Episodes like when did these air? So maybe it was just Paramount sort of giving out the 10 best over and over that sort of pounded into the cultural consciousness.
Yeah, I mean that's very possible. I have no idea how that stuff worked.
Yeah,
I know that at least I think there is. Yeah, I don't know how it worked. I don't know how syndication works worked back then if there was like a
requirement to play certain ones or something.
Yeah, well, what I was thinking was I know that as far as Doctor Who is concerned, there's a lot of lost episodes because the BBC used to just reuse the same videotapes.
Sure.
Because they didn't think people were going to watch things ever again. And every now and then you hear of a new episode being found in like some totally unheard of corner of the world.
Sure.
Because when they were sending the tapes out to all these different stations, because there wasn't like a satellite broadcast, you were expected to then send the tapes back.
Right.
But some places just didn't do it for whatever reason. So every now and then there's places that pop up. Oh, there's an episode that we haven't seen in 60 years or something like that. So I'm wondering if that's the kind of – if it's like that where it's – they just put together – like this is the Star Trek tape,
right?
That everybody uses, or it's like the batch of tapes. Like you're thinking, yeah. I wonder if that's how they did it.
Yeah, yeah. That wouldn't be unheard of, I guess. But we're gonna play an audio clip. Me and Claire are gonna come back and break down our final thoughts and feelings about Turnabout Intruder.
Starfleet expressly forbids the death penalty.
All my senior officers turning against me.
The death penalty is forbidden. There's only one exception.
General Order 4. It has not been violated by any officer on the Enterprise.
I am responsible. The execution will be immediate. Go to your posts. Go to your posts. Mr. Nelly, take him to the brig. Prepare for execution. Go on!
Right, Clay. Last TOS episode, Turnabout Intruder. If you guys are on YouTube, you can vote by clicking in the little upper right-hand corner of the video. There's a little gray circle. Click there. You can vote as well what you think on our 1-5 scale. What are you going to give Turnabout?
Well, as a Yes album title, it's a 5.
Absolutely.
But as an episode, as an episode in a show that has claimed historically to be very socially progressive, I give it a -5. But as just an episode of Star Trek, I don't know, 2, I guess.
Yeah,
like a low two.
Low two.
It's pretty well.
I'd give it a high 2. I think.
Yeah, I don't know. It's because it's like it's a crap episode.
Yeah,
with a really cliche setup. Yeah, I was gonna say watching Shatner go whole hog is kind of fun, but I don't know. That doesn't save anything, I don't think.
It's the kind of episode to me that sort of, it just sort of like stumbles along without ever falling. You know, it's like every step of the way is just like, why is this happening? Like, why don't they just do this? But it never really falls apart on itself. It just kind of stumbles across the finish line and then you're like, well, that was over.
Yeah, when you were saying before, if you think Shatner is trying to fill the space, he might have been in this episode, because thinking back, I think the worst thing that these episodes can be is boring.
Yeah.
And this is a boring fucking episode.
Right.
There's a lot of – the death knell for these episodes, for me anyway, is when you spend an inordinate amount of time discussing, like, course plotting.
Yes.
on the bridge or something, and there's a pretty long-winded scene of them debating course plotting. And then there's also a couple scenes where it's just, like, Sulu and Chekhov kind of talking about what's happening.
Yes. Yep.
And the same with, at least the one with Scotty and Bones, they kind of like are deciding whether or not to commit mutiny, which is, you know, sure.
One thing that I will say about this one is they didn't know it was going to be the finale, but almost all the cast members are in it, except for Uhura, I think, who I don't...
Oh, yeah, she's not in it.
Yeah, I don't think she's in it. So they kind of did a nice job there, where usually they have either Sulu or Chekhov in, and they have both of them.
Yeah, yeah, that's... I think it's another smushing of the history of the show, but I think we might have talked about this before, but I always forget how little Chekhov is actually in it.
Yes. Sulu, too. Sulu's not a big... This is actually a... season one was much better at getting other crew members involved. Once McCoy got the... or DeForest Kelly got the third starring credit in the titles, every episode is just those three. Everyone else is relegated to basically setting the course, or Uhura says there's a message coming in.
Right.
And it's a, you've mentioned before, it kills what variety you can have on the show. Where every away party is always McCoy, Spock, and Kirk for some reason. Like, no matter what the situation is, it's always those three going down to do things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just gets old after a little bit. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 2. Clay will give it a 2 as well, but that's about it.
One of the good things that they changed when they got to TNG was they had enough people with specialized positions that made sense.
Yes.
That you could actually bring them down in a grouping that actually made sense to the situation.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. In addition to all of them having full personalities.
that helps too.
They can do things. But you're right. It's like they each have a job that they can specifically bring a skill set to, which can serve different episodes differently. All right. That's it, guys. If you enjoyed the content, you're on YouTube, a like and a comment's appreciated. iTunes or any other podcatcher, you can rate us on there. We'd appreciate it. You can go to facebook.com/thePenske Podcast. All that stuff on Facebook. Patreon.com/thePenske Podcast. You can give a couple dollars a month. You get extra content. We talked about pilots for May. We're going to be talking about Mad Men and Miami Vice.
Oh, yeah.
We got the question about who could vote for anything but Miami Vice. Some people voted for Mad Men, I guess, would be the other way around, which I'm happy about. I think that's a good balance.
There's Undercover Wes, and then there's Which Way Is Up.
That's like a seed in the ground. I just got to figure it out. That's it, guys. Hope you enjoyed TOS.
I was going to mention, sorry.
Oh, sure.
Did you happen to see Chris Pine on SNL last week?
I saw the news headlines about it. I didn't see it.
He did. They did a Star Trek thing, obviously, but they did old school Star Trek, and he was doing Shatner Kirk, and he was really good.
I'll have to check it out. I don't know why.
It's fairly subtle, but he's really good at it.
After watching all these, I'll have a good idea to judge it. But yeah, pretty good. Check it out. Outside of that, we're going to be back with the movies after this. We're going to do the TOS movies, 2 TNG movies. So there's 10 movies. And then it's Deep Space Nine after that. And I'll probably sneak in the animated series because there's 20 episodes. They're probably on the off day that the movies don't air during the week. So the movies will be once a week, and then we'll move to the animated series to fill the Thursday slot.
I will say that I feel like I've just been kind of biding my time to get to the movies. It's like it's a good example of what we're talking about with this show, because like I'm interested in the original series, but I really like the original series cast in the movies.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like I'm super happy and interested in seeing, you know, where all this came from, but what really drew me to the TOS cast was always the movies.
Right.
Never the show.
Yeah, so Clay, I think you've last I talked to you about it, you'd agreed to do the 10 of them. So, because I want to keep them consistent across and not have people. You can't really bring a new person in into the third one of, you know, the Voyage Home or something and be like, yeah, what the hell happened? How is everyone out of there?
Yeah, because they are oddly, they are pretty much a, at least the
two, three, and four
are just straight sequels.
Yes, they are.
Which is kind of interesting given that the show was not really like that.
Yep, and then we get five and we can talk about that when we get to it.
Oh, yeah.
But that's it, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Greatly appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed our sojourn through TOS. You can check out the PenskePodcast.com to check out all my written reviews for the episodes that we didn't podcast about. Just because I'm the completionist, I needed to see all of them, and I'm on my way to doing that. So, Clay, thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Guys, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.